With sports car racing news and analysis from around the globe, this is the Double Stint Podcast. Here's John DeGeese and Ryan Marine.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Double Stint, Sports Car 365 Sports Car Racing Podcast here in Indianapolis. I'm Ryan Marine with John DeGeese from Chicago. And, John, we had the return of SRO America over the weekend. A lot of news from this past week to cover as well, plus more racing to look forward to this coming weekend. So it kind of feels like a normal summer by and large with actual sports car racing to be talking about week in and week out.
Yeah, it's starting to, although in a little bit of a different context still, but it is exciting to see cars back on track from almost every sports car series, with at least right now or within the next few weeks.
So we'll start with a look back on this past weekend. I should also mention there was an NLS race as well as a Creventic race over the weekend, and we might touch on that here in a little bit. But to start, the return of SRO America, which did get its season started if you go back to the beginning of March. It's been a little while now, but they did have a couple races under their belts and a busy weekend this weekend with several of the championships, John, running three races over the course of the weekend. Not so much, though, for the GT3 series, GT World Challenge America, powered by AWS. They ran their traditional two races over the course of the weekend. Maybe we'll start with you from afar, your impressions from watching from home in Chicago, and maybe if you have any questions about my experience, it was my first time back at the racetrack with the new protocols in place and experiencing what racing is going to look like most likely for at least the short-term future.
Yeah, from my vantage point, it looked like everything went to plan. It looked really well polished up, lots of racing on track, but I guess we're always used to that with SRO America. But the triple headers, you know, having a couple races on Friday, that was a bit exciting to sort of see the GT4 cars back on track with Sprint and Sprint X. But that's by the time Sunday rolled around, you were sort of feeling maybe, okay, here's another race. But you got to totally understand what SRO America is doing. They're trying to get as much racing as they can in to the weekends and not add additional weekends later in the calendar year. And SRO in Europe is doing the same thing with GT World Challenge Europe, the Sprint Cup series. So but overall, looked like some great racing. Saw some dominant runs from some teams, some prizes as well, especially in the GT3 races. I wasn't expecting a lot considering the car count, and needed a caution, and he just needed a couple little other things in race two to develop, and he turned into some really good racing in the end.
Yeah, I totally agree with that, and I think for good reason, people were a bit down looking at what the car count, I think it came out to 8 cars for the GT3 race, and you also had a handful of GT Sports Club cars mixed in there as well. They have their own 40-minute races to kick off the new GT Sports Club America Championship. That race was run within the GT World Challenge America race. So that was kind of an interesting twist there. But to your point, despite the fact that there weren't a ton of cars on track, we actually were treated to some interesting things. Race one on Saturday in particular stands out because it looked like we were in store for another Shelby Blackstock Trent Hindman domination like we saw in the first two races back at Circuit of the Americas, and an ill-timed caution really caught them out. And they were forced to pit under yellow after basically the rest of the field had already pitted it, and they were shuffled back a little bit, and it set up a fun duel to the finish between the two team NSXs, with ultimately Kyle Marcelli holding off Trent Hindman there, and kind of similar circumstances, some craziness, a penalty, the case of Shelby Blackstock hitting the off button instead of the pit lane speed limiter button after serving a penalty. That put him kind of behind after another strong opening performance to get the second race started, and that opened the door for DXDT Racing and George Kurtz and Colin Brown specifically to pick up a race win. So we did have some surprises, like you said, and there was enough kind of craziness that you really couldn't predict that it did keep us on our toes.
Yeah, and those closing laps of race two, that was quite exciting, seeing George Kurtz hold off a Martin Barkey and then getting pressure from Martin Fuentes behind, and then Chris Wilson charging through the field in the Windward Mercedes, the previous gen AMG GT3. And it was really exciting seeing the AM drivers sort of all battle it out, and Considering the car count, I wasn't really expecting that. To see the top four finishers all within, I think, 1.2 seconds at the line. And, you know, we've been critical in the past, I think, about the car count and about maybe the direction the series is taking with the elimination of the all-pro lineups. But having pro-am, genuine pro-am lineups like we have now does add a bit of flavor to that. You know, when you have the silver car, as in the Trent Hinman, Shelby Blackstock car hitting trouble, you know, these pro-am lineups are right there to pick up the pieces. And it's quite entertaining to sort of see that dynamic happen, especially as you have the, especially in race two, when you have the AM driver finishing the race.
Yeah, I think you're right. That's probably what the series was hoping for with the elimination of the pro class. I think that's the ultimate outcome they'd like to see, and it did make for some compelling racing. Although, for my money, Pirelli GT4 America, both Sprint and Sprint X this weekend, consistently put on really entertaining shows, and I think the battle at the front of the pro class, or I guess the overall class, in Sprint is particularly compelling. Maybe not quite on the level we had last year because we don't have the Panos, we don't have Ian James, but even still, between Michael Cooper, Spencer Pompelli, Jared Andretti, and then you can throw Drew Staveley into the mix because while he was a bit off of the ultimate pace this weekend, was very, very strong back at Circuit of the Americas, you throw all those guys together, and we had a really good race at the front of the field in all three races.
Absolutely, and then Gregory Leofouge in race three, when he was filling in for Sean Quinlan in the Stephen Cameron Racing BMW, he was right up there fighting for it as well. And Michael ended up winning two of the three races, Spencer with the victory on Friday. And yeah, it was great racing. I'm always a fan of this format, single driver, 50-minute, flat out. It makes it really easy to follow. There's no minimum pit deltas. There's no potential for, issues or any controversy there. And it's really simple. There's a pro class and there's an AM class. And this is what I like about World Challenge, what World Challenge was back in the day for all of its classes. But this is what I really like about SRO America right now. And I was really impressed by Black Dog Speed Shop rebounding from their issues on Friday. They had turbo-related issues to their McLaren, worked throughout the day. I think they got a hardship lap later in the evening on Friday. And Michael Cooper came out and really put on a strong showing both on Saturday and Sunday, and is now in the points lead in GT4 Sprint. So it was really good to see, especially with team owner Tony Gapel's not there that weekend due to an emergency eye surgery for him. It was the first time he missed a SRO America event, I think, since 2017. So really good to see Michael in victory lane, or whatever you would call it, the podium, the backdrop, the socially distanced area where you would be holding one of your assistants will be holding a separate microphone to talk to Michael, or the winners, but still great stuff all around in GT4 Sprint.
Yeah, I'll say that was strange and really a challenge. It's so hard to hear down there, and to stand 6 feet apart makes it pretty difficult. Even in Parc Fermé, where we were holding those interviews, you'd have the cars driving through tech and things like that, and you can't even read lips because everyone's wearing masks. So even knowing when they're done talking could be a challenge. But anyway, we did our best. Hopefully those who watched could enjoy and were able to bear with us as we muddled through. Did want to briefly bring up the Sprint X side of things as well, where Bill Oberlin and James Walker Jr., who when that pairing was announced at COTA, I thought could really accomplish some big things, and they did not have a good opening weekend to the season back in March, but they had a very good weekend at VIR, picking up two wins and a second place finish. And man, Bill Oberlin was charging. He almost made it 3-for-3.
Yeah, I think it would have just been a few more laps, and he would have definitely gotten the NOLA Sport car of Matt Travis there at the end. But great stuff all together for the Bimmer World team. I think the BMW had an overnight BOP adjustment as well heading into race three. So even just seeing Bill's pace there, Earlier in the race, he was knocked out. Well, actually, I think the race was called, the start was called off, and then it was restarted, and he was brought back up to the start of the head of the field. And actually, now just thinking about it, that was actually race two, not race three. There was so much racing over the weekend, it's hard to actually keep track of things a bit. The called off start was race two. Race three, James started the car, obviously, and Bill finished because he made the charge to the end. So, SprintX didn't have as many cars as it had in recent races either, but I think it still put up a really good fight. And overall, I think a really good weekend return to racing for SRO America. And Ryan, you were the man on the ground. You were talking to a lot of people. You had a social distance and take all the necessary measures. And what was your general feeling and mood throughout the weekend? What was the sort of feeling in the paddock, you know, considering a lot of these teams were back at a racetrack for the first time in quite a few months?
Yeah, outside of a smattering of testing that's been done throughout the quarantine period, this is pretty much the return to the racetrack for just about everybody. And I think there was a palpable sense of relief and joy to be back at a racetrack and back racing for so many of these people. From the team side of things, this is obviously what keeps the lights on. So that was a big deal. And even for the gentleman drivers, I thought it was quite interesting. While so many series are shortening their race weekends, this actually was extended with some extensive test days prior to the race weekend proper. I think it came out to something like 5 days, just about at the track, if not on track. So, and it seemed like it was really well received, actually. Maybe that's because it was an escape from everything else that's happening in the world. The thing that really struck me was how willing people were to be compliant with the regulations, whether that was the distancing or mask wearing or whatever. And certainly there were some that took it more seriously than others, but I did find as the weekend went along, adherence to the protocol became the norm, and I saw less people circumventing the rules. And that leads me to believe that maybe it was just a case of adjusting to what has been put in place, because in a lot of instances it kind of runs contrary to what has been done in the past under normal circumstances. So I took a lot of pleasure in that. I thought it was a good weekend for a lot of different reasons. I think the three race weekends got really rave reviews from a lot of the people in the paddock, so this might be something that sticks. I'm not sure how much I loved it. It was exhausting, but for the fans at home, it meant a lot of racing to watch, and for those paying to be there, or even being paid to be there for that matter, it gave them a lot of bang for their buck. So there was a lot of positives to take away from it. One thing I did find interesting was a lot of scuttlebutt around the paddock about the races that are currently on the calendar, and I think, John, as we've talked about on previous episodes, any calendar you see for the rest of the year and maybe beyond that is going to be provisional. Any event is provisional until you actually show up, and maybe until you actually get a race run, because we showed up at St. Pete and even had cars on the track, and that didn't end up happening. And so the two events that remain that appear to be the biggest questions are Sonoma and Watkins Glen. And I think Watkins Glen in particular, given some of the restrictions that are now in place, at least currently, in the state of New York, for people flying in or traveling in from other parts of the U.S. even, that have been particularly hard hit in recent weeks by the pandemic. And I think there's some concern that we could see a similar restriction put in place in California, depending on how things go. I think in both instances, time is still on the series side, and that's a positive. But, you know, in the case of the NASCAR race at Watkins Glen, we've already seen that canceled and replaced by a NASCAR race weekend on the Daytona Road Course.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is not just impacting us. Like you said, it's not just impacting SRO America. It would impact IMSA as well, NASCAR, like you said. So a lot of question marks. I think, Sonoma is the next SRO America round, I think, in the second week of August. So a decision is going to have to be made pretty soon. I think we know that something will be a for sure yes or no, I think, within the next 2 weeks. But Watkins Glen's, I think, in the middle of September. That's after the IMSA race that's scheduled for Watkins Glen. And then IMSA also has a race at Lime Rock the week after there. So we should get a better idea, hopefully, in the next couple weeks. about the scope of this, but we hear that SRO America does have some backup plans they're working on with other facilities potentially to sort of take those places if those races end up need to be canceled due to local laws or restrictions or mandatory quarantines and whatnot. The situation in New York and Connecticut and the Northeast is basically that if you're arriving from one of the states that has a high COVID rate right now, like Florida, like California, like Texas, you have to quarantine for 14 days. So that basically makes it impossible for any of the competitors to really take part in that race if you're from those states. And that would make it unfair for, you know, SRO or IMSA to move forward with a race in that state if, you know, there's a good chunk of those teams, which are largely based in some of those states, including North Carolina is one of the states, I think, currently on that list.
That's correct.
There are a lot of question marks, and I think we've been talking about this all the time. So, you know, just stay tuned and be subject to change. I think that's the biggest word right now as we're still going through this pandemic and into the summer months.
Yeah, just quickly on the subject of North Carolina, it kind of popped up because my camera operator over the weekend, he's from New York City, and he has to prove, because VIR is located right near the North Carolina border, he has to prove he stayed in Virginia in order to be allowed back home without going into quarantine. So anyway, I hadn't thought about that, but that's something that that kind of became real when he was telling me that story over the weekend. Anyway, that was a look back on the SRO America weekend at Virginia International Raceway. If you've got more curiosity about what happened, you can check out Sports Car 365. Plenty of coverage from over the weekend can be found there. Same can be said for some other racing that happened over the weekend. We had NLS racing once again, and boy, for the second straight NLS event, it comes down to a post-race penalty. This time, the results, I believe, are still provisional, with the Haupt Racing team provisionally earning their maiden win after a penalty to the Octane 126 Ferrari. And I find that interesting, John, because it looked like they had won on debut the last time until they themselves received a penalty.
Yeah, absolutely, Ryan. Some craziness in the first couple NLS races, and you can check out the full reports on Sports Car 365. Our Daniel Lloyd has been covering that from afar and been doing a really good job on our coverage as some of the major GT3 manufacturers sort of put their support back in to racing resuming. And I think the Nordschleife has kind of been the home of that for the last few weeks before some of the more regional series accelerate within Europe.
And congratulations also in order to Herbert Motorsport for sweeping the podium at the Creventic race over the weekend, the Monza 12-hour. Congratulations to all involved. And we've got a recap available at the website as well. But to the news of the week now, John, and an interesting article, I thought, on Ferrari. They've certainly been in the rumor mill as a manufacturer interested in a prototype future. Where does that stand at the moment? What have we learned, and what do we expect from the Prancing Horse?
Well, they're still, quote, very focused, end quote, on pursuing a top-level prototype program, whether that's an LMDH or an LMH. And I think that's the surprising part because, you know, especially through this pandemic, especially through budget cuts and a lot of people looking at economical ways of going racing, it's interesting to see that Ferrari's still keeping the door open for a potential Le Mans hypercar program, which would mean creating a bespoke car, you know, a chassis, engine, hybrid. And I think that sort of goes along the lines of where they stood late last year, where they didn't want to have, you know, put their name behind an existing LMP2 constructor like a Dallara or a Ligier or whatnot for LMDH. And they were sort of proposing an LMDH model around their own chassis, which ultimately did not pan out to be. We know that Ginetto is also pushing for something like that of being included as a constructor in LMDH on a similar level to what Ferrari was sort of pushing for. We know that it only will be four constructors in LMDH, but it is interesting that LMH is still becoming an option. And ironically, we have the two, you know, current front runners, you would sort of say, in the constructor world, in the small constructor world, from Glickenhaus and Ginetta. They're both sort of opening their arms for potential customer programs in LMH using their chassis. But again, that's something that Ferrari is not interested in either. Antonello Caletta, the director of Ferrari's GT racing activities, which we understand would fall under an LMDH program or a prototype program, whatever it would be, LMDH or LMH, Caletta would be in charge of that, mainly because it would be tied more towards a customer focused effort. I don't think what we're seeing from Ferrari would be a full-on works program like we see in Formula One or something, but it's interesting to see that there's still discussions. They haven't ruled it out, and especially, you know, now given the economic climate, there might be some real traction for this. But we've seen this before, you know, from other manufacturers that show a lot of interest, and Ford rings a bell to me, all those years of them evaluating, and all of a sudden they go completely quiet and ultimately nothing materializes. And for the record, I feel that a Ford program in LMDH is pretty unlikely at this point, based on some recent intel I've heard. But going back to Ferrari, it does seem that there is still some interest, which I think is good news considering where we're at right now.
That is good news. Also good news, so many of the race teams that we know and love still planning on being on track, and a big part of that is the initiative, at least here in the States, from the federal government assisting small businesses, which many of these race teams are. The PPP has had a pretty major effect on racing in general, but sports car racing in particular.
Yeah, this is the Paycheck Protection Program created by the U.S. Small Business Administration. It came out almost immediately after the lockdown began in the U.S. in the middle of March, and it basically allows businesses, small businesses, any company under 500 employees, to take out a loan with the government to help pay for the payroll costs to keep employees employed. And there's some extra fine print involved with it, where if you use the majority of your loan money for payroll and you can prove to the government that those people have been retained because of that payroll, the loan would be forgiven, and it's essentially a grant, if you will, where these businesses in the U.S. can help them get through this financial crisis right now. And the document containing all of the companies and businesses that have applied and are using this loan was released last week, and I think it's something like 4 million companies in the U.S., small businesses, and it's quite remarkable to see the amount of businesses involved. And I went through the list and found a bunch of key sports car teams that that have applied. It's anywhere from Ray Hall Letterman Lanigan Racing to K-Tech to Motul and Core Autosport, Riley Technologies, Pratt & Miller. Pratt & Miller actually got between $5 and $10 million, and that's a big asterisk on that, because that company employs 325 people, or at least they claimed they'll be, you know, using the payroll protection service for 325 jobs to save. They do a lot of work in the U.S. defense sector, so racing is kind of a side job in a lot of ways from Pratt & Miller there. But really interesting to see some of this, and great to see some stalwart sports car teams like Wayne Taylor Racing, Meyer Shank, Flying Lizard, being able to take advantage of this too, because, you know, you never know if this wasn't in place by the U.S. government, we might be seeing some of these teams not on the track right now. And I think there's a lot of positives to be had from it.
Definitely. I think there's been some reticence from some of the teams to speak publicly about receiving this aid, but frankly, I see no shame in it. And in fact, like you said, this has been crucial to keeping the lights on and keeping people employed. That's just a massive part of what we've all been going through here recently. So all credit where credit is due. This money has been crucial to help keep the sport moving forward. And I think the success that we've seen with grid sizes not shrinking too terribly noticeably, really, over the time since the racing shut down and now has picked back up, maybe this deserves some of the credit for that. So
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, it's a really interesting story, and I enjoyed reading that on the website. Finally, in the news section here this week, John, we have confirmation that the Intercontinental GT Challenge, powered by Pirelli, We'll be sticking with just four events. We had the cancellation of the Suzuka race, about a month ago. And there's one other change, which will be the date for the Kyalami round, which remains on the schedule, but no replacement for the Suzuka race, at least here in 2020.
Yeah, and I think that makes a lot of sense right now, especially when I think when you and I were sort of trying to figure out what track could it be in Asia. We mm-hmm. knew it wasn't going to be Sepang, and trying to think, well, what other race could they double back on, or would they create a new event and it would just be for 1 year? That didn't make a lot of sense to actually try and do that. So I know going back to four rounds for IGTC isn't ideal for the teams or manufacturers or SRO, but it makes the most sense right now. And that new date for Kyalami is December 12th. I think it's 3 weeks later than what the initial date was, but although that moved around quite a bit too from when it was initially announced, even before COVID. But this basically puts it right at the tail end of the year, right now at least, for scheduling. And it makes it easier for teams to sea freight their equipment from Spa to Kyalami, because the Total 24 Hours of Spa is scheduled for late October. So this opens up that window there for a more efficient, more cost-effective transportation method for a lot of the IGTC teams.
Okay. Finally on the show this week, we've got some racing to preview. We'll start with IMSA returning to action at Sebring, and not just the WeatherTech Championship, but many of the other series as well under the IMSA banner. We'll start with the WeatherTech Championship, though. 29 cars on the entry list, and an updated BOP that's even a tweak from the regular season BOP that was released post the Rolex 24, right?
Yeah, so Daytona is always has its own BOP. It's much like the 24 Hours of Le Mans, where it's kind of a race in itself in terms of the BOP table. So IMSA on March 11th released the BOP for the 12 Hours of Sebring, then a few days later, unfortunately, had to postpone that race. Since then, they've come out with an updated, revised starting BOP that'll be effective beginning this weekend at the sprint race at Sebring. And it's not much changes from where it was. The Cadillac loses 5 kilos of weight. The McLaren gets a weight increase, but a boost increase. Mind you, the McLaren wasn't even slated to take part in the 12 Hours of Sebring, so I wouldn't even really call that a change. And then there's been an adjustment for the Mercedes-AMG, which gets a larger air restrictor, 1 millimeter, not much really there at all. So good to see that IMSA sort of held its ground from where it was in March. There hasn't been many changes to this starting BOP, is what we would sort of call it. This BOP is the table they'll be evolving throughout the year for the remainder of the races, as long as they don't go back to Daytona for any reason. But good to see that. And you said for the entries for WeatherTech, 29 cars for this weekend, the return of LMP2, with a good strong entry there. All the teams we expected to return are returning there with their lineups, so good stuff. Also, Michelin Pilot Challenge and IMSA Prototype Challenge will be making their season restarts. Interestingly enough, they're going to be utilizing the WEC pit lane outside the Holman Strait there. So it's a nice way of social distancing in some regards between the WeatherTech teams and the Pilot Challenge and Prototype Challenge teams. Although the Pilot Challenge race will actually be Friday afternoon before WeatherTech even has its own first practice session. So I really like the way IMSA sort of spaced out the weekend a bit to keep more distancing and not having a direct, a full paddock of three series all on track there. So looking forward to following it again. And you can be sure to check out all the information on SportsCar 365.
Yeah, a lot of coverage planned for sure. And also we've had ACO cars on track recently with a build-up to the start of the ELMS season and also the WEC season resuming as well.
Yeah, absolutely. We had some WEC cars testing at Paul Ricard last week. Toyota, Baikalis, and Rebellion were all in action over the course of a couple days there. We had some ELMS teams testing as well, some other WEC teams from some other classes. And now the season opener for European Le Mans Series kicking off this weekend at Paul Ricard, a very strong entry list there. So lots to look forward to as well.
Should be a fun weekend and a busy weekend. Great to have sports cars back on the track with some regularity here in this day and age. So check out all the coverage throughout the weekend at sportscar365.com. That's it for us on the show this week. Thanks so much for tuning in. Please leave us a rating and review on iTunes if you have some time to do so. And also, feel free to leave us comments and questions for future shows with the hashtag AskDoubleStint on Twitter or by leaving a comment in the comment section. Talk to you next week with the next edition of Double Stint.